Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, coronavirus version number two. Sherry gives me the two sign, as I almost forgot. Because these days are running together. My wife, we're driving down the road today because it was essential to go out to a park. And she's like, I don't even know what day it is right now. I'm like, it's Wednesday.
No, I have a friend who's been posting on Facebook, like, today is. And I'm like, keep them coming.
Yeah. Sherry, are you surviving? That's the most important question here. Are you surviving? Is everyone out there? Are the masses who are listening to our podcast, are you surviving, folks? Sherry, what are you doing right now? Other than working and writing 10 stories a day and doing what you do, breaking stories, kicking ass.
We're still working a lot, of course, you know, and I don't know what that looks like in the weeks to come, as I do think that we'll be self-isolating, stay-at-home order for a while. And so we're still a little bit in like the beginning stages of there's a lot going on. Yeah. But I mean, I haven't left my house since I last saw you to record this podcast, and we're social distancing.
Not even go out to the grocery store?
No, Alex is doing that for us. So we did it, honestly, towards the end of when we thought we might need to do it, and then he did it one more time. So we're not like going crazy, but
we have a fun episode. I mean, I don't know if fun's the right word. Last week we were really serious. If you missed last week's episode, go back and check it out. Some great stuff from Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley and from Inquirer Executive Editor Burl Love, who talked about the mayor talked about leading a city in the middle of a crisis, and our editor Burl talked about leading a newsroom in the middle of a huge, huge news story that we've never seen in our lifetime. Some really great insight there from both of them. And that leads us to this week. We're going to lighten it up a little bit, but we also have a huge guest. Governor DeWine is going to join us today, so stick with us as we bring him in and chat with him. And I think we have some really great questions to ask him. And then we're also going to have Michael Betts. And this is where we're going to mix it up a little bit and have a little fun because I think we all need to kind of just figure out what we're doing right now. And if there's any ideas for doing things differently, Mike is going to...
He has organized basically like a virtual party, which is very much in line with who he is. He's, you know, he's really out there, kind of like a social influencer. He was the marketing director at the Inquirer. Yeah. He's a new fabulous marketing job somewhere else. And I miss him walking by my desk. Not that I'm at that desk right now. And, you know, the first two were with Pam Kravitz, and she'll be on the line later with us. This is going to be an interview by phone call, unfortunately, because normally when I would see Mike Betts, I would give him a hug. But that is not how things are going to be going. And so one of the first ones was Molly Wellman, you know, very, mm-hmm. you know, one of our most famous cocktailologist.
Is that what
yes,
she's called?
I guess.
Cocktailologist.
She made a drink the other night. And so they're kind of like sending out ingredients and they're like, here's the things we're going to do. And there's going to be crafts. And we'll let him talk about it because it's still pretty new.
And this is Facebook Live, right? Where he's doing this every day. At what time?
Yes. I'm not sure if it's every day, but just, you know, on a fairly regular basis, and he's organizing it. And I think...
Cool idea.
Yes, and it's these kind of things have been helpful to me to, like, stay social. I'm very social and like to go out. So are you, maybe in a different way than me.
Yeah.
But I like seeing this. And, you know, this is the whole thing online just in general, and I usually don't have time for these kind of things as much as I would like to do them. So I have a little bit of extra time.
I think we'll talk about this, I think, more... maybe on the tail end of after we talk with Mike Betts and his crew. But I think there's some silver lining and some positives that'll come out of this and come out of being home and having to adjust our lives and challenge ourselves personally, I guess, in different ways. You know, communicating better with your family. I'm already figuring – I'm learning as we go on here, like – I'm like, oh, yeah, I've missed this about my kids because I'm usually in the office until 6 or 7 o'clock at night or longer. But, yeah, interesting. There's some...
I definitely see why it was so important to keep the parks out. Because, I mean, I definitely am hearing from my friends, and we've done it twice ourselves. Like, this outside component is going to be super important for our health, for our mental health, for just our children to do activity. I mean, if you ask Jack, it's classic. What's your favorite part of school? Recess. And so I think that these parks are going to be super important. It's, you know, if you see, it's hard for me to see the images of caution tape up around playgrounds. It's a necessity, though. We don't know how long the coronavirus lives on these surfaces. We do know that it does for at least some amount of time. Yeah. And so that order does include closing down that playground equipment. And that is for a reason.
Yes. Let's quickly jump over and talk a little bit about some political government and politics stuff. Sherry, you and our Hamilton County reporter, Scott Wortman, today on Cincinnati.com, as we record here on a beautiful Wednesday, sunny afternoon in our Mount Washington studio, Silent Phil's, otherwise known as Silent Phil's swanky or apartment. Is it a condo or an apartment? Apartment. Governing in the time of coronavirus. How is that done?
It is not easy, I have to say. It just, I mean, I think when I look back on my time covering City Hall, there have been some real moments, obviously, and I think our loyal listeners know, you know, Chief Blackwell, the MSD hearings. There's been a lot of things, you know, the day just recently that the first time Tamaya didn't come. Like, there's been a lot of things. But to walk into council chambers last Wednesday, and with no public speakers, the mayor, for everyone's protection, did issue that order. And to see them spread out around in that cavernous, beautiful chamber at desks, it was very somber. And to see everybody was at work, but just in a different way, in a way we don't know what it's going to look like in the future. It was really just, I think I paused when I walked in the room to kind of look around. And even though I was expecting it, I'd already been writing about it. This is what it's going to look like, and it's going to be different. But the feeling in there was also different. And now it's workaround time. I have to say, like, just kudos to the dual press conferences every day with the commissioners doing press conferences on Zoom in the mornings, pretty much at 10 o'clock. It seems like that'll continue. I encourage people to listen to them, honestly, because I don't cover the county, but I still find them extremely informative. I watch those.
Yeah.
Then the governor has one at 2 o'clock, and then the mayor has been typically having one at 3:30. And so, yeah, I do actually spend my day, I guess, listening to government meetings, but more than I would have in prior times. And they've been very open to questions, all of them, like long sessions of questions from reporters, willing to answer.
It's great.
In a way, that's a lot more accessible than on a normal basis.
It is.
Which we have, at least for reporters to be able to ask these questions and disseminate information. I'm sure, like, our regular public speakers are probably missing that. And their voice matters, and they've been encouraged to write letters to the clerk's office. That probably needs a little bit of tweaking going forward on how their voice is heard. But it's just, it's a different way of doing things, but it's working.
One thing I want to ask you about is, and I know this was discussed last week around council, and it's interesting you bring up the point of some of these video press conferences. I know that's what Commissioner Denise Driehaus is doing, this daily live streamed press conference. And it's all geared around social distancing. And I think that people are allowed to ask questions, or the reporters are allowed to ask questions.
We're mostly calling in
remotely
at this point. The county one is all remote. The city's working on making it all remote, but they are, the city one at this point is like, if you want to come in person and you feel like you need to, you can. And so they're still allowing that. I'm not personally doing that because I don't feel like I need to at this moment.
Gotcha.
But if I wanted to, they were open to being that accessible.
So my question, kind of dovetailing off of that, is do you think we're going to go, not we, but that our local government officials are going to go to actual public meetings that are basically live streamed, or that, it almost like video conferenced council meetings or video conference commissioner meetings, where, Denise Driehaus is in a room somewhere and Victoria Park's in a room somewhere and Stephanie Dumas, they're all whether they're at the county commissioner building or the Portoon government center, or they're actually in their own homes. I know that was discussed a little bit last week. Jeff Pastor proposed that idea over at City Hall. Where's that at?
They're making that available right now, at least at the city level. And we're not at a point. It's so early on. Like, we don't have to take they don't have to take any crucial votes. Mm-hmm. But I could see if this lasts a while, they might have to. Some spending votes and I could see that looking very different than anything we saw last week or from the normal. I can see, you know, really trying to have some sort of workaround. It's for everyone's protection. I mean, we're seeing some of these leaders, you know, in Congress get it or have to be tested and then they're self-quarantining. Mm-hmm. The last thing we need is for our leaders who have to, we've elected them, they have to make these decisions. They need to stay well as ourselves and the public and everything. And so it's hard to be like, nope, I think we should have things in, you know, normal and meet in person and and be the way we were, because self-protection really does become the overarching thing that we have to consider, which is not to say everything should still be done in public.
Yes. Well, and I mean,
I'm not going to change that much.
I don't want to get down this rabbit hole, but I can see if council starts to do, you know, a video conferencing or virtual meetings, where knowing what's happened there with the text messages, where we can get down a road of some question asking on that.
So I think, you know, besides the idea that we're in a very different time right now, I kind of think about, I've looked at my planner this morning of what things would look like now, and it seems so far away. We'd be covering, like, did somebody new win and one of the elections, we'd be starting to even turn towards looking at the general election and what that would look like with these candidates. And because we didn't really have an election, then we don't really have the answers to those questions. And so that's kind of being sorted out.
It'd be a PX Palooza right now with, you know, if Charmaine McGuffey had won the primary, how's that going to look going against Bruce Hoffbauer, Fanon Rucker against Joe Dieters?
I mean, I think we're all on the edge of our seats wanting to know if your predictions were right. we have a little bit more time to go,
right? The answer to that is probably no. So there's no science to it. I think now when I have a real strong gut feeling, or I've taken all the information in, which I do, I take all the information in that I've gathered over time and then I make it. What I think I'm going to do next time is, after all the time and hours and taking all the info in, and I think, okay, this is who's going to win, I'm going to go ahead and predict the other person.
But we don't know, because, I mean, we found out some stuff about the election today.
We did. That the legislature has expanded absentee voting until April the 28th. And that is going to be the election. There will actually be no election day where you go out to the polls and get your sticker and all that. It's all going to now be done by absentee voting. And so I tell you, we talked about governing in the time of coronavirus. Now, the question is, or I guess this is a question for a week now, that candidates and political consultants and donors and all those folks and journalists have been asking, like, how do these candidates campaign in the time of coronavirus? Because it's so funny to think, you know, after 2016, the old school way of campaigning really became cool again, and that's going out and knocking on doors and going out to events and shaking hands and kissing babies, and none of that is being done right now or can be done. Sherry, what's your take on that?
I think we're going to see the rise of, like, at least for a little bit here, maybe not always, if we can get back to normal, the rise of the phone banking, something that can be done remotely. Mm-hmm. And I read, like, a national story was talking a little bit about this for, like, the presidential elections. And it talked about, well, if you call somebody on the phone, it turns out they might answer because they're home. And so
if they have a home phone, right?
Think we'll see a shift to that, and other than possibly paying it could be volunteers or, you know, paying some staff to do that. It's low cost,
and it's something I'm gonna write a column about. I'm gonna call up some consultants and ask them. I wonder now, I know it's still an important piece of campaigning, but TV ads, Facebook ads. I wonder if there'll be a shift now to spending more money on those platforms than there would have been anyway. I don't know. It's just we're living in such a crazy time. Maybe today it's one answer and tomorrow it's another one.
Well, there's some data out there. Facebook has exploded again, yeah, with like people just using that as a communication tool.
Oh joy! As you know, I'm not a big Facebook fan.
I know. I'm going to try and tap my screen time down just a little bit next week from the average of 11 hours. Ooh. I was like, whoa.
I every time that little thing pops up on my screen, I quickly swipe it off because I never want to look at it. Because
even for me, that was really high.
Anyway, well, let's.
I do want to give Jason just a little bit of a shout out. Speaking of his columns, we'll give two shout outs here. We're gonna talk a little bit here, Jason. He did win best columnist in the state from the Associated Press of Ohio, and this is a very prestigious honor.
Well, that's very nice.
I could not be prouder of him. They specifically cited his column about, you know, what it's really like in Trump company. And that column went viral because he grew up there. And so he had a really unique take on that. And I really would like go back and read that column if that's one you missed. But it was for a selection of columns. And so I couldn't be prouder of you.
Thank you. That really means a lot.
And Pam Kravitz, too, let's give her a shout out because she's going to be on later as part of, you know, this virtual Facebook group that's happening. And she is one of the most popular people, artists that came out of the City Beat poll. So very proud of her.
No, that's great. And while we're on the topic of giving shout outs, let's also give a shout out to our entire newsroom. So I'll take it right to Burl. Shout out to Burl and his entire team, which includes all three of us sitting here in this room. We're all socially distanced in this large room. And that's in that same Ohio AP contest, the Inquirer won the First Amendment Award. And those, to me, those are the best awards, the team awards. A few years ago, it's funny to think it'll be 2 years ago next month when we won the Pulitzer Prize. I'm getting goosebumps right now saying that because I just remember the pure joy of our coworkers' faces and just, man, it was so fun. But the First Amendment Award is the absolute biggest award in that Ohio AP contest. And it just, to me, it just shows that this goes from the top with Burl and Michael Perry and Carl Weiser, our politics editor. And I could mention a bunch of other editors and folks. But our commitment, Mark Word, our data editor, our commitment to watchdog and public accountability journalism, to me, when we get an award like that, I think it reflects that we are incredibly committed to that. And I know that's what, judging by the emails that we get from our listeners, that's what so many people love and are expecting from their local newspaper and newspaper website and newspaper mobile app and multi-platform Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. So congratulations to Burl and team, including us. So
I totally agree.
Let's now shift and it's great to, in the middle of all the craziness here and certainly, you know, all the things that he has going on, to be able to take a few minutes to chat with us is really cool. So let's bring in Governor Mike DeWine. Pleased to welcome, and it's an honor to welcome Governor Mike DeWine onto the That's the Cincinnati podcast. Governor, thank you so much for joining us today. And more importantly, thank you for all that you're doing for our great state.
Well, happy to be with you. Thank you very much.
I have to say, I feel like I've spent a lot of time with you lately, watching the press conferences. And I have to say, you know, Dr. Acton has been very impressive. And then there I read a profile of her, and she is from my beloved native Youngstown.
She is indeed. She is indeed. And I think she's doing a great, great job. When I picked her, I wanted someone who not only had a passion for public health and a background in public health, but also someone who was a good communicator, could talk to the public about public health issues, because I think so many of the things that we wrestle with have to do with health. But I had absolutely no idea, of course, that we were going to be in the situation that we are in today. I had no idea that she was going to be doing a press conference with me every day at 2 o'clock. So,
Governor, so much has been written and said about the decisions and the leadership that you've had in these past few weeks. One of the things, I don't know if you've been asked about yet, but you know, there's been so much talk about your lifetime of experience, or you know, over 40 years of experience in public office, but also your experience in your personal life and the things you've had to overcome, some personal tragedies with the passing of your daughter, even when you were a little, you know, that you lost a sibling. How have those experiences and the work you've done in Haiti and just seeing all these things, how has that empathy that you have developed over time and those experiences shaped you in the decisions that you've now are making on a daily basis and rapidly here over the last few weeks?
Well, I think we are a product of how we're brought up, of what our background is. I think we're a product of all our cumulative life experiences. Some experiences obviously you know, have a more profound impact on you. You know, you talked about the loss of our daughter Becky when she was 22 in 1993. Certainly has a profound impact on me, and it, you know, it emphasizes the importance of life, how precious life is. You know, we one of the things that we've done where we've really learned about public health is in Haiti. Becky was never went to Haiti, but
yeah.
we ended up because I was taking trips to Haiti as a U.S. senator and focusing on, we had troops down there. You know, we ended up working with a Catholic priest who we still work with in a school that now is named after our late daughter Becky. But we saw, you know, a lot of public health issues. That was during the era of you know, when AIDS was, you know, didn't really have a cure for AIDS. We met Paul Farmer, who's down in Haiti, who remains a friend and someone who we learned a lot about in regard to public health. So I think all those things were important. I think also, frankly, you learn from your experiences that don't go as well. And I, if I look back on my public career, some of the decisions that I, you know, wish I had back, usually it was, when I got it wrong, I didn't have enough facts, I didn't have enough information, I didn't drill down deep enough. And so in regard to this crisis, you know, I just keep asking questions, and I still do every single day. It's probably driving my team crazy, but, you know, and we try to find the people who know the most about it. And that's, you know, if you look at the decisions we made early on in this crisis, about closing the Arnold Classic, for example, in Columbus, and then the bars and restaurants and on, and they were gut-wrenching decisions, but they were made only after, you know, I thought that we had this, all the facts that at least we could gather and everything that we could put together, and so made those decisions. The other thing I've learned is, again, when I've made mistakes, when I've looked back and said, gee, I wish I'd done that differently, it's many times it's been when I didn't trust my instinct or trust my gut.
Yeah.
My instinct throughout this has been, hey, we got to move. We got to move fast. And that's what the experts were telling me, but it was just, I just felt it in my gut that, hey, this is right. We got to move. And if we don't move fast, we're going to regret it later, and people are going to pay a heavy price for it. So I think that experience, doesn't mean you're always right, but that experience of having some failures, it does help you try to sort the facts out and you know, come to a better conclusion.
Did you have anyone kind of giving you pushback when you were like, we're going to have to do a stay-at-home order? Did you have anyone pushing back on you saying that that is not going to be good for business in this state?
Well, I think there's always the, you know, my family was in a small business for, you know, 70 years. My grandparents started it, just the two of them, and it grew, and they ended up probably with about 25 employees when I used to work there as a kid, and in grade school, or excuse me, in high school, and then in college. But so I know how tough it is to run small businesses, and I know that, you know, if you cut off income to a small business for any period of time, many of them can't make it. So I fully understand the gravity of what we did, and it's just like I said, it's gut wrenching. You know, when you close the restaurants, you think of all the, even though they can still do carry out, you lose all the servers, you lose so many people that are, you know, not making a lot of money, just trying to get by, some raising kids. And so I understand how serious this is, but I also understand that we got to protect people's life. And, you know, we want everyone around, as I said, for next St. Patrick's Day to be able to celebrate, and for the next baseball season. And, you know, we want people to be alive, to enjoy life. But it's still, these are still tough decisions.
You mentioned Haiti, and the work that you and Mrs. DeWine have done there for so many years is just unbelievable. Have you actually, you mentioned that, drawing upon that experience, have you brought that, actually mentioned that in meetings with your team? Have you talked to any of the folks down there during this time to get advice? I remember seeing a quote that you said about one of the priests down there who runs the school, or you know, you do work with. I think you a couple years ago you said something along the lines of he's a guy that you want in a time of crisis. Or
Father Tom Hagen.
Yeah, Father Tom Hagen,
Catholic priest that runs the school, and we're very good friends with you know, with him and Doug Campbell, who's his assistant. And so we have talked about this, but, you know, I'm not sure I necessarily sought advice, but, you know, he's been in contact with me and tells me he's praying for me. And, he knows, he has a pretty good idea what we're going through.
Yeah.
So a lot has been said about not having enough of these essential things that we need, testing and, you know, some of the supplies, masks and things. Have you actually spoken to the president? I mean, Jason did, you know, mention that you've been in politics for a while. Can you call up the president on the phone and ask him for help?
Well, I certainly have talked to the vice president. I've talked to the president. He called me, I don't know, about 10 days ago. Well, it was actually on St. Patrick's Day. We were getting carry out at a pub with two of my granddaughters. They thought they got a big kick out of hearing the president. I put him on speaker. But, you know, they understand that there's a shortage. I mean, it's no secret where the shortages are. And, you know, we're not unique in Ohio. We don't have enough tests. You know, we spend a lot of time, you know, trying to drill down on this. How do we deal with it? I mean, you've got the Cleveland Clinic now that's up to 500 to 700 tests a day. But then you've got, you know, some people that can't do it because they don't have the swabs. So, you know, all of this is kind of a logistic nightmare we're trying to unravel. At the same time, we're trying to make sure that we're going to have the capacity in our hospitals when we're going to have to dramatically, you know, increase the number of beds. So a lot of things going on. I talk a lot to other governors. I talked to Governor Hogan last night, Maryland. So, you know, you kind of try to compare notes, compare ideas, and we're all kind of in this together, even though each of our states is at a different stage. Each of our states is a different situation, but we're all facing ultimately the same monster that's out there.
Did the president have anything specific he wanted to say to you?
No, he just had called. I don't remember really much of the conversation. It was a relatively short conversation. I think it had to do with the. I'll tell you what it was. It had to do with the elections and where we had postponed the completion of the election here in Ohio. So he called me that. On the 17th, about that, just to say, you know, that he had made a comment about that today, that day. So,
did he agree with your decision?
Well, he had he had called me because I think the day before, somebody had asked him about the election, and he made some comment. And then the next day, he said something that was very favorable about me. So I think that's why he called me about that. So that was, but it was a relatively short call. I have no trouble with access. I mean, because the vice president is the lead person on this for the White House, I have no trouble reaching the vice president. Usually we're dealing with a federal agency that we're trying to kind of cut through some red tape or something. And, when we need to do that, I get on the phone and we try to do it. So
here we are, 9 days after the decision was made on the election. You look back on that, would you do it the same way? I know it was pretty crazy there for 4 or 5 hours. Would you do it the same way?
Well,
would you do it differently?
If I had it to do over again, I would have done it earlier. I think that's, we should have done it earlier. But kind of the way that unfolded was it started to become clear to me a couple things. One, that there were people, older people particularly, who always vote in person, who mm-hmm. didn't get an absentee ballot. Then it was, then once Saturday expires, as I recall the date, then they can't get an absentee ballot anymore. They can't apply for it anymore. So these were people that were then trying to weigh, am I going to go vote or not vote? And I had, one couple, for example, in their late 70s who said, and I know them, he said, we always vote. But we talked about it together. We talked about it, and we decided it's just too dangerous. We're not going to go out. So it was clear to me we had people all over Ohio who were weighing those choices, which are choices they shouldn't, in my opinion, people should not have to make. And so the other thing was 35,000 poll workers, and I don't know where you all vote, but where I vote, you got some people who are not exactly young who are, been poll workers for a long time. And so exposing some older poll workers who are the most at risk to 13 straight hours of people coming through there, that didn't seem like a very good idea either. And, there was an alternative. I mean, it wasn't like we were canceling the election in that sense. The election would just continue, except people wouldn't be able to vote in person that particular day. So if I look at it, it was the right decision. Should have been made earlier.
I have one other question.
Just didn't reach that decision, and frankly, until that morning when things started to came together in my mind and the facts kept changing.
Yeah.
And I saw the messaging that morning on TV, which was, particularly for older people, don't go out.
Yeah.
And that's what we were telling them too, but the same thing we were telling them, hey, you need to go vote. So kind of mixed messages.
But I have one other question, and this is, you've been getting so much attention across the world, really, and every bit of the praise you've gotten, you absolutely deserve. The one thing it's been really heartening is that even there's Democrats and people who didn't vote for you and people who were against you or been against you politically who are out there praising you right now. Does that encourage you, once we kind of get beyond this in a couple months or whenever that is, does it encourage you that there's been a bipartisan generally nature in response to this? Are you encouraged about when we come through this, that maybe we'll all be a little nicer to each other?
I'm very grateful that I think, political leaders in Ohio have really come together mm-hmm. on this. I mean, I've talked a lot to Tim Ryan, for example. I talked to, Sherrod Brown.
Mm-hmm.
David Pepper has had some very, very nice things to say. We all are in this together, and I think people have had that attitude, and I think that's a great, great thing. Does that continue beyond this? I don't know. We'll see. But it is a common shared experience that we're all going through, and his friend reminds me, you know, if there's a nice editorial or somebody says something, you know, we kind of remind each other that in this business, you know, what goes up comes down, and you know, the other thing is we got tough days ahead of us, and you know, we're just beginning to get into this thing, and it's going to get worse, and we're going to have to make other tough decisions, and so, you know, what I do hope is that we, you know, all of us try to stay focused on. Let's get out of this thing, and let's get out of it alive, and keep our casualties down as much as we can. And I think that's really a common purpose that everyone has. But what makes it difficult is, you know, so many people are unemployed, and so many people may lose their business, and those are not just economic statistics; those are all people.
Yeah.
Those are all, you know, a business person who spent his life, literally 10, 20 years building up a business, and or she, and or a couple, and, you know, for them to see that go down, is just, it's horrible. It's just really, really horrible.
You mentioned, Mrs. DeWine, and I know you guys have such a great, great relationship, and she's very much involved in your decision making. Has there been any advice through this that she's given you that is really stuck out and, you know, stuck in your heart and your mind as you've gone through this? Or what does she tell you something every day that, like, hey?
Well, I think I shared this with you all, but when I told everybody to buy the, you know, thermometer, businesses to, you know, be able to test people when they came in, when I got home that night, Fran said, you know, before you did that, you might have checked to see if people could actually buy them. She says, because I'll tell you, you can't find one. So, and if you can find one, the price is like double what it was before. So yeah, Fran is, that brings me back to reality.
Pragmatic, you know? Pragmatic as always.
You know, somebody's got to do that, she says. You know, somebody's got to bring you back to the reality. And look, we've been married 52 years, and as you know, we met in first grade. So
yeah,
she's someone who, you know, we've been through good times and bad times, and you know, she's my partner in all this.
Would you all the experiences that you had, all the offices that you've held? Is this the office that you always wanted?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's an office where I think you can make the most difference.
Yeah.
You know, I love being in the United States Senate. I always felt that I could get things done. I could work with people, make things happen. But this is, you know, particularly if there's a crisis, you know, people do look to the governor
yes.
to lead. And, you know, I just think that my past experiences, starting when I was a county prosecuting attorney, all that experience, I think, has helped me prepare for this time. And that doesn't mean I'm going to get everything right. But, you know, I think that experience does help.
Yeah.
I ran for governor once before. I kind of joked, nobody remembers it. It didn't last more than a few months, but that was 1989. And, you know, if I'd been elected, I think I'd done a pretty good job, but I have, you know, so much better grasp of the job and so much more experience today than I would have had then. So I think that, you know, it's all kind of prepared me for this time.
I know, and you were in the U.S. Senate during 9/11, in all of your years, when you're thinking about it, you're processing things, you're talking with your team, did it ever cross your mind, like, hey, one day I may have to be leading an entire state or some, you know, standing at the lectern every day as you've been doing in all these meetings? Does something like that ever just cross your mind, and the magnitude of something like this ever really, you know, run through your head? Like, I'm going to have to do this someday, maybe.
When I talk to people who have been governors, and this is before I actually became governor of Ohio, I mean, they would all say, look, there'll be some crisis that comes up that you have no idea now what it will be. Hmm. So I, you know, I expected that, but I thought it would be a flood.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it would be, you know, tornadoes. I thought, you know, but this is once in 102 years. We haven't had anything like this since 1918. So this is, it's not just once in a generation. It's once in like five generations. And
yeah.
So, no, I never, you know, would I have ever dreamed that, you know, we would have a pandemic? Candidly, I think I was like most Ohioans and most U.S. citizens. I thought those days are over with. You know, we've got the medicine now. We've got the technology. We've got this. And, of course, I was wrong. So, no, I had no idea. No idea to have anything like this.
Well, we appreciate all that you're doing and the idea that, you know, our state government is so important in times of crisis like this. I think we're all kind of learning that lesson because we think of our city councils and our mayors and like this is it now where, you know, decisions to save our lives are being made. And so, and thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
And also,
I appreciate it. I do want to say that, you know, I've had great, great, great cooperation with the mayors around the state who have done a phenomenal job. You know, I'm on a call with the big city mayors every day, and not just to tell them things, but frankly to listen, because what they tell me is very, you know, extremely valuable. You know, Mayor Cranley and all the mayors throughout the state, they have been very, you know, very, very helpful. And I think that when there is a big crisis like this, I think people do look, even in a state like ours, it's a very local government state, and we like it that way. But
yeah.
I think people look to the governor to try to lead. And in some of these cases, you need a coherent policy statewide. Instead of letting, you know, sitting back and seeing what everybody's going to do, I think that, you know, we put a team together so we were getting really good health information. And as I say, we got good information coming in from the mayors, and they've always been very, very helpful. So they've really been our partners as we move through this.
Governor, thanks so much. And just thanks for all you're doing, leading the way here. And also thanks for your accessibility and giving us all this time here today. And obviously your accessibility, not to us, but to the public. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it very, very much, and have a great day.
Take care. You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Wow, good stuff from Governor DeWine. Great that he took all this time for us. It was interesting because his team originally said, hey, we got 10 minutes with the governor, and the governor gave us 25 minutes.
Anyone who's ever talked to us knows we never talk that short.
I had a feeling once he got going, they'd be totally cool with it. And so we're...
What'd you think? I mean, you wrote a column about things, and this is like a real first discussion that we've had with him one-on-one. What'd you think?
Yeah, well, I'm so impressed with how the governor has handled this, and that's what I said in the column last week. And I really touched on his personal side, some of the things he had to overcome, how those life experiences have helped him really develop a lifetime of empathy. And I think it's really kind of come to a culmination of, you know, it's really all come to a head in this moment, and I think that's why he's shining. So I thought the stuff that he said about Haiti, and not just the fact that him and Fran have spent so much money and time and poured in a lot of efforts there. Obviously, they have the school there that's named now after his daughter, Becky. But not just the fact that they go there on missions, but the fact that they've also spent time really learning and understanding the public health aspect that's there. And now he's now kind of leaning on that experience or what he's seen there to sort of help him, I guess, relate it to what's going on now. I had a feeling he might say this when we asked him the question, that if he had it to do all over again with the election, that he would, that his, the thing he would have changed is just to have done it earlier. I can't disagree with him. That's really my biggest thing too on that is, it had he have done this maybe a couple days earlier, maybe on Saturday, maybe heck, even on the Sunday before the election. You know, and then obviously his discussion with Donald Trump on the day, on what would have been election day.
We know so many people who talk to the president, because Bill Cunningham said, remember we were talking to him, right. He said the president calls him too. And it's like, we must run, you know, in some really, you know, prominent circles that the president just calls.
Was there anything else that sort of caught your attention from Governor DeWine?
You know who we've kind of all gotten to know through this? Fran DeWine,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
She's very important to his life, and she was kind of there when he was, you know, running for election and everything, but she's been at his side during these press conferences and on different days taken a prominent role to talk about things. You know, she's been making videos about cooking and, like, how to do things at home, and she also has really talked about, you know, staying social through using these other platforms. Today at the press conference, she talked about dropping off craft supplies somewhere, and they're just going to do a craft virtually. And, you know, our next guest, Michael Betts, is doing something here, which she's encouraging people to do this, not just like, here's what I'm doing. She's encouraging everyone to do this. So Michael Betts and, you know, Barbara Hauser and Pam Kravitz have kind of put this group together, and we are going to talk to them about, you know, what this looks like and actually putting it into practice.
All right, special guest segment on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm pleased to welcome in community enthusiast and downtown resident, our former colleague at the Inquirer, Mike Betts. Mike, you're on the Cincinnati.com hotline. Are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Welcome and thanks. And you have some friends with you virtually or on the phone on a conference call, obviously, because we're all social distancing. But please introduce the folks that you have with you who are going to also join us here on the podcast.
Sure. I have two of my best friends and community collaborators, Barbara Hauser, who does a lot of engagement, like the Red Door Project, and then also Pam Kravitz, who's a local celebrity and art celebrator, artist, all of the things.
Pam and Barb, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I love what you guys are doing with the virtual, what do you call it, a virtual cocktail hour? Is that?
Well, I'll take the lead on this one. It's pretty much just, you know, we were concerned for a lot of our friends in, you know, the restaurant and hospitality industry, but then it kind of got deeper and deeper, and we thought about a lot of our friends who do local trades, like, you know, artists and, you know, stylists and whatnot. All of these people were impacted in regards of the whole coronavirus and basically not being able to bring in an income. And so we're like, okay, we're loud, we have a platform, and, you know, the three of us plus our friend Carla Lamb kind of got together after maybe a couple cocktails one night and said, let's just create a Facebook group, because we were seeing other people doing it in other communities and kind of bring the community together, but also thinking, hey, this is a good opportunity that our network reaches, you know, far and broad. So why not introduce Cincinnati's best, you know, craft makers to the conversation and show off Cincinnati's biggest talent virtually?
And so far, I know you've had Molly Wellman on, and she taught us how to make a drink, which was greatly appreciated. I feel like there's a lot more drinking.
Absolutely.
But so, and you're raising money too, right? So you're going to have these things in the afternoon, and you're actually even sending out like planning documents, right? Like, these are things you'll need to make a drink, or these are things you're going to need to make Friday night pasta, right? And so we can kind of prep for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've kind of designated Mondays because you need that extra energy and engagement for kicking off your Monday, and Fridays at 5 p.m. to kind of feature these individuals. So we're trying to get if it's a cocktail, if it's a recipe, we're trying to get those out to people in advance so they can actually follow along instead of just watch the demo. So I think Pam can talk a little bit more about what's happening on Friday at 5 p.m.
Sure. This Friday, my girlfriend, Eileen Ross, who's 513 Eats, She is an amazing chef and wonderful personality and such an advocate for so many things that are going on in our city. And she's going to make sort of like a, she called it a potato dumplings, kind of like a gnocchi, it sounds like. So she sent out the supply list or the recipe list, ingredients, and then she's going to both do an online or a live version. So, you know, you can ask questions as it's happening, and also then just to have the link to share for later in case you're not able to join at 5 o'clock this Friday. And then she has two charities that she wants the donations to go to, and those are all on our Facebook link. One is Blue Manatee, and then the other one is to the restaurant industry.
Which, of course, people don't
so
have to give.
We're not really organizing any of the... we're just asking the partner, the craft maker, to give us a distinctive link, whether it's a GoFundMe page or giving, like Pam said, to those two organizations that are helping with, you know, coronavirus relief, financial efforts for those people affected. So we just wanted to utilize our platform, you know, our wide network of friends to basically spread the word and get it out there so these people who are affected can at least get some sort of income. So we're calling it virtual tips.
And I do feel like it's serving a dual purpose because it's doing good that way. And it also, it's bringing you like face to face with people and you don't feel so alone. I don't like, we're just at the very beginning at the stay at home order. And I feel like we're going to feel more and more isolated as we go on. And it's things like this that are very helpful. And so I appreciate this. I happen to know you all, you know, but even if I didn't, I want a community still.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of these people are doing it individually. And not everyone has access or knows about it. And so it's a way, you know, I've seen Christian Diatoso doing live demos from his kitchen, but I happen to be friends with him on Facebook, or Molly Wellman. And so this is an opportunity to really share it with a broader group and a broader audience so people don't feel so isolated at this time.
And it's certainly something.
And collectively, we all enjoy these establishments. So most of these people we're just helping are our friends. So it's really getting them, you know, off the ground and up, back up on their feet, because that's the good thing about Cincinnati. It's a big city, but it's the world's smallest city when it comes to everybody knows everybody.
Exactly.
And helping each other out. I mean, we're so supportive of each other, don't you feel? Like, I 100%. Always am such a cheerleader for the wonderful community that we've all created here in Cincinnati. And I love how Barbara and Michael were saying, these are existing on Facebook, a lot of these things, and they're and this is what we've done is just kind of put some of them together to help make it yell just a little bit louder and say, hey, you guys, we're all here together, and let's do this at the same time or together and celebrate each other and support each other and support our community.
And the cool thing to add to that, we actually have had somehow like people from all over the country have been invited. And so people have commented saying, hey, this is so interesting. We'll be doing the demo from Denver. We'll be, you know, in there in spirits from Chicago. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's a good opportunity for us to highlight reasons when this stupid virus goes away for people to come visit Cincinnati, you know, and still hype up the city because it's such a wonderful place. You know, we're all, you know, we all love it here.
No, and I agree with that, definitely. How can people join the group?
Basically, it's a live group. They just go and search virtual lessons, and it's been shared on different pages, like Molly Wellman's page or 513 Eats and whatnot. We can also provide a link for you guys all to post on how they can join it. Again, it's a 100% open group. We just ask people to be collaborative, share their ideas, and they may not need to do an entire, you know, demo or instruction. We have people who are actually just engaging on like, hey, I am interested in doing a science project. Would anybody be interested in that? Hey, I'm a massage therapist. Would anybody be interested in having lessons to be taught how to do that. A lot of wives are volunteering their husbands, and vice versa, partners. But it's just bringing out the community together, and you know, it's kind of a virtual, you know, it's a virtual community.
Yeah, and the official name is Virtual Lessons Top Craft People, Cocktails, Cooking, and More! Exclamation point.
You know what? A good headline tells you everything you need to know.
When we created the group, we may have had a few cocktails.
and you said this is...
They might change that name. No, just kidding.
And you said this is every Mondays and Fridays for the time being right now at 5 o'clock on each of those days. Are there any, have you guys planned out, you know, the next few, you know, Fridays, Mondays, you know, next couple weeks? Is this something that you just,
so,
go ahead.
No, actually, that's a really good idea.
First come, first serve basis. That
okay.
meets the need. We also, like, next week we're going to have someone doing, beauty and makeup lessons, so that's kind of cool. A local person who owns a bridal boutique and helps with that, so obviously all the weddings and events are shut down, so they're affected too. But it's just basically highlighting, and we're looking, you know, obviously everybody's doing their own thing, but, you know, we have almost 1,000 people, you know, since we started the group on Monday.
That's awesome.
So it's a great audience for people who are looking, And you know, you go to the pages and you're looking, like Molly Wellman's video has been seen almost 2,000 times. So people are participating, and hopefully they're tipping.
All right. Well,
yeah, we're working on, we're reaching out to some of our friends and contacts as well, and we're going to work on a schedule.
Can you tip, this is maybe a dumb question. Can you actually, is there a system through Facebook where you can give tips?
Well, each organization or each person is giving us their, if it's their GoFundMe account, if it's their virtual or their Venmo, or each of the, whoever's doing the demo is providing us with the link to how they're accepting donations.
Gotcha. Oh, that's really cool. Gotcha.
Yeah, we're just trying not to be the middleman. We don't want to have to dispense.
Yeah. No,
right,
that's great.
Right.
So because we're remote, yeah, we are missing Phil's fabulous buttons, and we have that So Cincinnati one, and if we had it right now, I think Phil would be pushing it, because this is So Cincinnati, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Great stuff. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Stay healthy.
Bye-bye.
Love it. Love the enthusiasm from Barbara and Mike and Pam and what they're doing. Love the creativity. Love it that people are really, I mean, I don't know if people are really embracing this time, but they're finding ways to deal with it and not just sit at home and you're lazy boy and watch TV.
You know, I was joking earlier in the call about that So Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But this really is So Cincinnati. You know, we are, everyone says, we're a small, big city, and it is, you can see it now and how people are pitching in to help other people.
Yes.
And, you know, the connections of, like, who knows who and who's helping who has really become, like, part of who we are as a community. And we're really coming together. And so I think this is just kind of really representative of that. And I can't wait to see really what other people do as our weeks go on. And, you know, the governor did make a reference, you know, we're really at the beginning of this. And, you know, it always like pretty much stops me in my tracks when he says that, because I feel like we're so in it. But we still have some time to get through this, and we're going to have to do it all together, but alone in our homes.
As I said on Twitter last week, working at home in 21 years of journalism, or in my career actually, has always been really, really hard. I've always had the career that you can work at home and the darndest thing is I can go to a Starbucks. It's got 50 people in it chattering, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't bother me. I can, you know, back to my sports writing days, I can go sit in a press box where 100,000 screaming fans but I can be locked in. But I have such a hard time just sitting at home at my dining room table, and I tell you what, it's a bigger challenge than even thought it was going to be. Like, it's just hard to stay concentrated and stay focused. Honestly, that's why I hear the governor say, "Oh, we're just at the beginning." I'm like, "Oh no."
Well, and for us, for anyone who has little kids, there's a homeschooling component to this right now. You know, you have to take a break during the day, and it's to homeschool. It's not to walk over to City Hall or something.
That's right.
It's like, you know, you have to focus on your family life a little bit. And like, I do have Alex at least doing the same thing next to me. His office is the living room. Mine is the kitchen.
It's also like, I love working in the newsroom because I just love being around.
I do miss you. I said on Twitter, I think today, like, you listening to your calls is very different than listening to Alex's. And I have to say, Alex's are a little scary because they have to deal with the economy. And I'm like, maybe you need to walk away from that call because they're a little scary at this moment. But it's a very different animal listening to him compared to listening to you.
Yeah. Alex, our Coolidge, our business reporter, knows and studies all this stuff, Wall Street and all that. Man, he's so knowledgeable about all that. And I don't even want to know what some of the things that he's telling you, because I've thought about calling him and asking him, and I'm like, no.
It's best not to look every day. We'll read the stories he puts out, and we'll kind of focus on our own, you know, politics world.
Yeah. We went hiking today at Caldwell Nature Preserve. It's in Carthage. It's a Cincinnati city park. We did that as like our lunch break. So that was fun.
Which, it's good to get outside.
I'll tell you what I've noticed, and I was telling you this earlier, what I've noticed, and this is Bethany, my wife, has been doing this, but what people are going out on walks, and they'll maybe get a block away from your house, and they'll text ahead and say, "Hey, we're going to walk by your house. We'd love to say hi." So this has happened like 3 or 4 times now. And we've done it too when we're on our walks with people. We'll text them ahead of time and be like, "Hey, you want to step out on your front porch and say hi?" And so we did that with our friends, the Janigans, the other night, and ended up chatting for like a half hour, and it was great to catch up and at 6 feet maximum, except for when Roman, my 3-year-old, who was the star of the podcast, went up and had to pet their little dog, Mixie.
All right.
Who's I think he's the same kind of dog as Charles Coolidge.
Charlie, I will say, of all the things at home, Charlie is exhausted at the end of the night because he used to be pretty lively in the evenings and like want to see us and
sleeping all
play.
Day.
Well, he doesn't sleep all day.
That's right now.
He's very worried about what all of us are doing. And I think a lot of people who have dogs at home are probably, you have to deal with the dogs. Dan Horn, one of our coworkers, he said his dog basically just stands there and looks at him because he's guarding him all day. It's the kind of dog he has.
Yeah.
And like the dogs are used to sleeping all day.
The new world we live in, you know, the new norm,
at least for a couple months, I look forward to the day when we actually go back to work, even though, the governor said, things are still going to look a little different when we go back, but I do look forward to going back, and I know we will.
I think it's going to be so fun that first day we're all back together in the newsroom. Just, I can't wait for it. I'm living for that day right now.
I know when we left.
I love being in there.
When we left election day, eve night, you know, I didn't think I wouldn't be going back for a long time.
Yeah. So you haven't been back since, right?
I have not.
All right. Good. We're not supposed to go.
No, I've been in my house pretty much.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, thanks so much for listening. You know, hey, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything you would like, so that's the Cincinnati Moments. Email Sherry or I. Sherry her email is scoolidge@inquirer.com. Mine is jwilliams@inquirer.com.
We'd love to have you on because I want to hear about these things.
That's right. We'd love to. Yeah, if there's some things going on out in your neighborhood or in your house or in something that you know you're doing that's unique or you think that people will be interested in hearing about, yes, absolutely. Let us know. Also, you could hit us up on Twitter as well, at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter, at Sharon Coolidge, and me at J Williams Cincy with a Y, J Williams Cincy with a Y. Love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you next week.